Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, October 22nd. This is the 40th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is the executive chef of an outstanding catering company based in New York City, and I will introduce him shortly. But first, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip. Then later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to always practice professionalism. Sure, there is a time for fun and play, but maintaining a high level of competence in your workplace will not only earn you respect, but it will attract the type of people and business that you want. How you carry yourself, your attitude, and even your dress make a difference in how you will be perceived and treated. So forget amateur hour and always bring your A game. It will lead to R-E-S-P-E-C-T, as Aretha says. That's my tip today. Now I'm really excited about my guest. It is Matthew Riznik. He's the executive chef of premier catering company, Great Performances, which was founded in 1979 by CEO Liz Newmark, with a mission in the arts while elevating hospitality to an art form in itself. With over 14 years of experience in the culinary, restaurant, and hospitality industry, Matthew brings his talent and passion to the company, which he joined in 2007. He navigates the fast-paced kitchen environment while accommodating guests and artists from all over the world in a multitude of venues. So welcome, Matthew.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Got you out to Bushwick.
I did, and it's amazing. I think we got that wrong. 14 years? We're coming up on 17 now.
Ah.
I think that's a little old, as
sorry,
I thought about it.
Sorry, I should have run that by you.
It's not your fault.
That's okay.
That's fine. I should update my bio.
It's even more impressive.
There you go. 15 is when I started working. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, getting into this industry and your background, how did you want to be a chef? Like
I didn't know I wanted to be a chef. Okay. I always knew that food was such a huge part of our lives growing up. I think the earliest memory that I've ever had was when I was about 4 years old, and I think my mom will probably be able to confirm that, is kind of standing on a chair Sunday, you know, around 10 or 11, Italian grandma's house. You know, me, mom, grandma rolling out the gnocchi, grandpa's making the sauce, you know, Uncle Tony's doing his thing over there. Like, everybody's kind of doing their own, you know, pieces of the puzzle for this dinner. You know, 3 o'clock, everybody comes around, you know, 15, 20 people at the table in the house and the chairs, like everyone. You know, it was just, it's really interesting just to be a part of that, just to see how, you know, food, how it brings people together, how so many life memories and life moments happen around it. Like, I was always just so interested in it, and I loved to eat as a kid. I was a really chubby kid. But you know, that was the Italian side of my family. You know, we always had gardens growing up. Cooking, like, real food was super important. The other side of my family is Polish. My father came from Poland, you know, with his family when he was about 12 years old. So, you know, that Eastern European heritage as well. Again, it was just nothing processed, nothing, you know, in the microwave. It was all real fresh food. A lot of it we grew in our garden. You know, it was just always a big emphasis on that in my family. So I think that started the love of food itself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I went to get a job, I was 15. I just felt like I wanted to do something, wanted to work, you know, make some money. I got a job in a restaurant. I just love food, so I figured this is a good place to start, at least. You know, $7 an hour, prep lettuce, work garmage, cold prep, you know, mop the floors at the end. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was brutal work, obviously, because you're the new kid. You're 15 years old. Maybe I even shouldn't say that. I won't say the name of the restaurant because that's a little illegal, but that's fine. you know, but what I loved about it, not only just the food, it was the camaraderie. It was these guys, and it was like, you know, hot pans and fire and food and swearing and dirty jokes and just fun. And it was just for this 15-year-old kid, you know, coming up from a fairly, God, what's the word, conservative background, you know, it was eye-opening. And I just immediately felt this love of the kitchen and the restaurant, the camaraderie and the people and the stories. And, you know, it was great.
I get it.
Yeah.
Because I have that love, too. Yeah. I think you have to love it to get into the industry. And what's interesting, because I worked a bit in restaurants, but I ended up saying I didn't see myself forever working in them. And gotcha. Now I ended up being a publicist and a radio host. So you
but
also...
for restaurants.
For restaurants, yes.
In the food industry. And so you have the best of both worlds.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And I love that experience. But it seems so you... I mean, now you're working at a catering company. You're not... I mean, you...
In a restaurant, yeah.
So you changed a little too, but I'm jumping ahead.
That's okay. I changed a couple years into that. I started... Mm-hmm. I got a job in the front of the house. In a restaurant.
Which is great experience
as
well.
Great experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I managed the floor. Actually, I started as a bartender there because I had never done bartending before. And I said, you know what? I love cooking. I love the kitchen, but why don't I try this? You know, from there, I went to front of the house management and learned that aspect of it. You know, I mean, it was fun because whenever the kitchen would get in the weeds, it wasn't the best kitchen in the world in terms of organization. I would just jump back there and help out. And that was fun for me. I've always been kind of hands-on that way, and it pissed some of the guys off, but they eventually got used to me and knew that I could cook and that I was going to help them out. It would be fine, you know? But, you know, cooks are territorial, so sometimes that...
Yeah,
sometimes
but when,
it gets you in trouble.
But when the cook called in sick, they probably loved you.
Yeah, exactly. but, you know, I went to, like, I kind of had that same moment that you did or similar to it and said, you know what, maybe the restaurant industry isn't the way to go. You know, I went to college, like, just go to business school. I was like, okay, so maybe I should get a real job, you know, as I kept mm-hmm. thinking about it in my 17 or 18-year-old head because I was having so much fun at a restaurant. I was like, this isn't sustainable. Like, there's no way I'm ever going to grow up. I got to go to college and get a real job. I dropped out in a year.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I can make this work. I can totally make this work. And I just wasn't feeling it. I didn't like the things I was learning. I didn't really care. I didn't see any prospects going into it. And I was like, I just want to go back to a restaurant and see what happens. So.
And this was in New York City, these restaurants?
I started in Westchester.
Okay.
Actually, so I was up in Westchester for my first job, and then when I transitioned to front of the house, I was up in Westchester as well. That's where I grew up. I went out west. I worked for a few restaurants in Arizona. I worked for some in California. I worked for hotels. I worked for Marriott for a while. And then I came back to New York City about 12 years ago. And again, I bounce around a lot. I mean, the love and the core of it has always been in the kitchen. But like I said, I love seeing what the front of the house goes through. I love seeing what the bartenders go through. I love working in that. You know, when I worked at Marriott, we opened up this 1,000-room hotel, 9 restaurants. You know, I worked a 52-hour shift because I'd work room service overnight as a cook. Then I'd wake up and be a waiter for brunch the next day. And then, you know, be a cook in the afternoon and
wow.
be a bartender at night and then go back to room service because I loved it. Like, I loved every minute of it. It was so much fun.
You are certainly passionate. And I truly believe that chefs have a different gene than the rest of us and can just go without sleep.
We can go without sleep. Yeah, it's a special
And be energizer
people.
Bunnies.
Yeah.
So how did you get to great performances then?
Well, I was working for the Myriad Restaurant Group down in Tribeca. And I left that. I took some time off. I worked for Murray's Cheese for a while because I felt that I didn't know as much about cheese as I should. Uh-huh. And I didn't really want a stressful job. So for about 3 months, I worked selling cheese. And it was like, it was amazing. I got to like sing and dance and yell and sell cheese and eat cheese all day long. It was kind of life-changing for me in a great way, but certainly not sustainable. But so at this point, you know, I'm 20-some-odd years old, 24 years old, I guess. Yeah, 23 years old. Like, never worked catering before. I was like, I've done everything else. Restaurants, hotels, retail, front of the house, back of the house, purchasing, consulting, like, did mm-hmm. it all. never done catering. So I said, okay, let me try this. So I answered a Craigslist ad for pretty much the bottom of the barrel freelance kitchen assistant. I was like, I don't have any experience. I totally lied in my interview and just said that I knew exactly what I was doing, and they bought it, so good.
At great performances, okay.
Yeah. Liz knows that, don't worry. I told her already.
I figured your team is listening, so I bet it's out there.
And so I started 7 years ago as a freelance kitchen assistant, which is, like I said, this is the lowest rung that you can get, pretty much. I just kind of busted my ass, was on call, never turned down a job, never called out sick, never came late, you know, did whatever was asked, you know, if it meant, you know, bussing dishes or running glasses or helping with sanit or, you know, doing anything, you know. And, you know, I had a really good chef who was a real hard ass. He screamed a lot, which is cool, and I'm fine with that, you know. But eventually, like, he saw that he wasn't going to break me, and it doesn't matter, you know, that this is my first catering job, that, you know, all the years of experience was still there, and I still had the talent, you know, to do something better. So then I became a freelance party chef, which means that you're leading the team of kitchen assistants off premise, right?
Right.
So I'm sure we'll get into how the whole structure of it works.
Well,
do you want to? Yeah.
Well, no, keep going. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to see, why did you reach out to Great Performances? And because it was founded by Liz Newmark, and it has, beyond a catering company, it's just its mission and everything it stands for is really special.
It is. It's amazing. Like, it's such an amazing story that, you know, 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago, you know, she started this company as an alternative way for females in the arts industry who were, you know, actors, actresses, right, to make some money on the side. You know, she saw a real niche market here, and a lot of her and her friends, she was able to help support them in between gigs and things like that. And, like, to understand those humble roots and to see how smart Liz was in terms of building this business to where it's become is incredible. I mean, that had a huge impact in my decision to really pursue them as an employer, you know, because it's part of my personality to, like, grow and learn and love and see and touch and feel. And, you know, I've done that throughout my whole life and my whole career. And, you know, it seems like in some parallel way that Liz did the same thing. Like, she started this, but saw this, and let's move into this, and let's learn how to cook, and let's, you know, let's learn how to staff, and we'll bring men into the fold now, and then we'll do this. And, like, there's just always something new happening. And, like, the reason why I love Great Performances, the reason why I stayed here, for many reasons, but there's never a dull moment. Ever, ever, ever. There's not one second of my day that I'm bored. And it's always a challenge. And I need that. And I love that.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
So you basically worked your way up from the bottom to pretty much to the top.
Pretty much. Yeah. So after that, I became a sous chef in the kitchen. And I just kept fighting for it, you know, and just proving myself and work my way up and up and up and up until now. And I've been the executive chef for 2 years now, I think.
And how many employees do you have now?
Well, culinary, full-time, including culinary, pastry, purchasing, receiving, stewards, is about 160. That's full-time. Then our off-premise team, which is our freelance team, our party chefs and our kitchen assistants, we have about another 130 that are freelance for that. So culinary employees are inching close to 300. And all together with GP has over 250 full-time employees. And then I think we're coming close to about 800 or 900 freelance in terms of front of the house and back of the house staff. But my team is, 300 strong almost.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. Nope. Okay, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to come back and learn more about Great Performances. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
And you're listening to the California Honey Drops on heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie? Oh, won't you save all your pumpkin pie just for me?
girl. Please don't give none away. Let it get sweeter by the day. But won't you save it, baby? Please save it. Come on and save it all for me. Oh, won't you save all your cherry jam? Oh, won't you save all your cherry jam? Oh, won't you save all your cherry jam just for me, girl? Please don't give none.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Matthew Riznick of Great Performances. So, Matthew, I wanted to find out more about the venues that you have. I want to say in-house, but are they, would you count them kind of in-house, like your exclusive venues, and then you do outside the exclusive?
Correct. So there's inside and there's outside.
Okay.
Internal and external, as we would call it. But, you know, Great Performances, we operate in two sectors, which is our public sector and our private sector. So the private sector comprises all of our social, our nonprofit, our corporate catering work. And that can be in or out of our venues, but that's the private side to it. The public side is all of our in-house venues, our exclusive venues, which would be, you know, the Apollo Theater, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, Caramore, Chelsea Pierce, Connecticut, Jazz at Lincoln Center, Sotheby's, Wave Hill, Museo de Barrio, International Center of Photography, May May Cafe, Museum of the City of New York, Signature Theater, and Four Freedoms Park. So those are our exclusive venues where we operate cafes and restaurants out of. But we also have partnerships, so wherever there's an exclusive venue contract with a restaurant or a cafe, we also have the exclusive rights to cater. So we're the in-house caterers at all of those locations, in addition to operating the cafes and restaurants. So we have the two full-service restaurants, which is BAM Cafe at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and then Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola at Jazz at Lincoln Center. And then the rest of them are usually grab-and-go cafes.
I love Dizzy's.
Isn't it amazing? It's the most spectacular view and the most spectacular food and music,
of course.
Like everything all together. It's insane.
I haven't done it in a while, but I live near there and I would go to the late night session.
Yeah.
Which
the hang set.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
It's very cool. Now I have to go again.
Yeah. And you don't think of it. I mean, you're in the Time Warner building that, you know,
yeah,
pretty much clean, put together, you know, and there are musicians and there's booze and there's food and there's like great things happening in this little pocket of a very put-together neighborhood, you know what I mean, that we love.
Right.
It's so cool.
It is cool. So the food that you're serving, how is it the same or different? And I know you have a farm and you're very local, so...
Right. You know, everything is different. All the venues have their own identity, their own culture, you know, and we really try to let that speak for themselves because so many of them are in cultural institutions, you know. The food has to always be delicious. It always has to be innovative and creative and wonderful, and that's the underlying factor of it all. It has to be sustainable. It has to fit our mission. You know, designing all the different food is one of the most fun things that I've had the chance to do. You know, there's so many caterers out there who say, I mean, we're kind of the biggest, littlest company that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of big box caterers out there who just have a set menu, hand it to their clients, their sales team sells that, and that's it. You know, for us, we get the most amazing requests from people. You know, in one breath, we can be doing South African food or Bangladeshi food or, you know, American food or French or Indian. It doesn't matter. Like, all over the place, you know? And, like, that's what's been really fun for me is trying to take those core values of the company, put that into something really, really creative, something I'm not even comfortable with. And, like, it forces me to think outside my shell a little bit. to do the research, to get the team involved, you know, and to really understand that, you know, we're catering to clients who sometimes they don't even know what they want. It doesn't, and we always are able to provide this service. And we have an amazing design department too, which helps because food and design go so perfectly together, you know? And again, speaking to the identity of each venue, whether it be one of our exclusive or just an area that we're working at, we really try to meld the two areas to make a really cohesive product.
Yes, well, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this Kachke Farm of yours.
So Kachke Farm was bought in 2007 by Great Performances, 60-acre organic farm in Kinderhook, New York. We plant, I mean, it planted on rotation, so 15 to 20 acres, you know, get planted every year. Three greenhouses, which are ones dedicated to seedlings and, you know, herbs. One's are full tomato and one's kind of a fun project one. But, you know, Kachke is amazing because the vegetables go to a lot of different areas. I mean, one, we have an 800-member CSA, workplace CSA.
That's really cool.
So every week, twice a week, we get deliveries from the farm. You know, our team, the farm team, does an amazing job of, obviously, one, growing beautiful products, bagging it, getting it down here, and then our team distributes it out to people, which is amazing because it's just something that's really connected, you know? And
Drew a blank. That's okay. What about the Sylvia Center?
Yeah, I want to talk about the farm a little bit more. The CSA is amazing, and what we do is we take – the CSA is a great avenue for our food because we don't know what we're going to sell. I mean, we can write a menu, a seasonal menu, which we always do, but we don't know if what is right there is going to be popping out of the ground precisely at that moment. You know, so the CSA is a great way to get, you know, farm fresh veggies into the hands of people who really can use them. You know, what we do as a kitchen is we make products out of the – call them leftovers, right? We had a bumper crop of tomatoes. You know, we have a whole line of artisanal goods, ketchup, barbecue sauce, tomato jam, salsas, salsa verde, things like that. Yeah, and that's a great way to use the products from the farm. I mean, we have 4,000 pounds of tomatoes that are extra, quote-unquote, this year. Our tomato jam flies off the shelves. There's far more demand than there is supply for it. So it's a great way to utilize that. And then whenever there's another bumper crop, say, you know, we had turnip tops. Liz goes to the farm all the time. We love to go to the farm, or we love to send our cooks up to the farm to, like, talk, just to be a little bit more connected to it, to talk to the farmers to understand where the food's coming from, you know, and having them do that is just, it excites and creates that passion. But we made turnip top pesto. We're making habanero hot sauce, you know. We're making, you know, roasted peppers and jarring them up. And, like, we do a lot of this because, like, we're obviously not going to let it go to waste. We're not going to compost it. Like, we're going to use it somewhere. And, like, that's really fun because then we can get to be creative. You know, we give a lot of this stuff. We just send it to a lot of the events that we have. If it's a private home client, you know, we'll package up little perfect containers of things that we've made from the farm. You know, pickle things for the next season, cure things for the next season, and then try to design menus around them that, you know, obviously help us utilize that product but really stay true to the ethos of our mission, which is a lot of fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun and smart what you do.
Yeah.
Okay, can I mention the Sylvia Center now?
Absolutely. So the
Sylvia I don't want us not to mention it. So
of course.
Tell us about it.
Gotcha. So that also in 2007 the Sylvia Center was launched. So the Sylvia Center is a nonprofit dedicated to teaching children how to cook and eat well with hands-on experience on the farm and in the kitchen. So Kachke Farm is home to the Sylvia Center. From May through October, the Sylvia Center immerses children in the process of growing, harvesting, cooking, and eating fresh and healthy food. In New York City, we work in the New York City Housing Authority Community Center with school-aged children and encourage them to take on active role in their daily diet by learning how to prepare simple, delicious, and affordable meals, which is an amazing thing. So the programs are 6-week cycles, and it's great because before the program got as large as it is now, there was a lot of work that was done. There's a lot of work done now on premise in the housing authorities, you know, at different locations, at schools, upstate. But, you know, before it got so big, and we still have the opportunity to do it, we have a smaller kitchen that's attached to our main kitchen, and, you know, it's still called the kids' kitchen. The sinks are low. You know, the bathrooms that were designed have low sinks in them, too. The kids came here, and the instructors, they came to GP, and the instructors came and, you know, taught the cooking classes right next to our main production kitchen, which was so cool because, again, just seeing the light in the kids' eyes when they realize that, you know, this is what food is, you know, and this is how to cook it, and this is something really, really special, was awesome for us. And then for them to kind of walk out, and we'd give them tours in the main kitchen, their jaws would drop, like blown away, because they're in this little group of 8 to 10 people, and they're, you know, cooking really simple food, and then, you know, they walk onto the floor, which, you know, has 100 people out there. It's just, it's a really cool experience, and something that we all feel a part of.
Yeah, it's very nice. Now, I need to ask you an important question.
What's that?
Well, last week I had on Bob Marcelli of Marcelli Formaggi, and he asked a question for you, because I asked him to ask you a question.
Gotcha.
So the question is, how do you get, keep, and train really good culinary talent? Noting he was saying it's easy to get high-quality products, but what about the talent?
It's tough. I mean, we're lucky enough and a large enough company to have a full-time HR department, a full-time staffing department, you know, who obviously help in recruiting and training and developing staff. You know, that's one side of it. So we are lucky in that area where we're not just hunting on Craigslist for people like me, right? you know, but the other part of it is the culture that we breed. And I've worked in enough places where, like, we understand that this is a very transient business, especially catering. Sometimes, you know, especially with the front of the house, you know, this is not the main focus. You know, this is just a stop in between something bigger and better. And because we're able to understand that and to make that work, and there's always going to be attrition, but it's the culture that we have in the kitchen that it's more of a mentoring kitchen. I call ourselves a teaching hospital all the time, you know, like rarely are we going to find someone that's going to come from 11 Madison Park and say, you know what, I really want to work in catering and great performances. That rarely, rarely, rarely ever happens. We've had people, you know, work with us and get really excited and then go take jobs at 11 Madison Park,
yeah.
You know, and that's okay too, because, you know, we build those relationships and we keep those relationships. Some of the guys that I've worked with for a long time, like even if they've gone and taken other jobs, when they have their days off, they come and work for me, you know? It's always about that give and take and the building of relationships, treating people really well, teaching them, showing them how to grow, because that was the opportunity that I was given, and that was the opportunity that I want to pass on. You know, I want those guys to understand and look back in 10 or 15 years from now and be like, you know what, that dude gave me a shot, you know? And like I said, I maybe scream twice a year. I've never thrown anything. I've never, like, you know... I'm not an asshole, you know, and none of our guys are. None of my production chefs or sous chefs or pastry chefs or cooks are. We all have a really, really familial atmosphere, you know? Like, I spend more time at work than I do at home. I mean, this is a second family to me, and they always have been, and I think they know that. I think we all feel that. It's a really, really, really communal atmosphere in the kitchen. And, yeah, I mean, everybody makes mistakes here and there, but it's really the culture that you breed is the way that you retain the staff. Because a lot of guys, even some of my top-level guys, you know, will tell me, listen, I got a job offer for, you know, 20 grand more a year. I was like, well, what do you want to do? They're like, I'm going to stay here because I like it. I love it. I don't just, you know what I mean? And, and that's what it is. Like, it's not always about the money. It's not always about the experience. It's about the people. You know, we have people here in our kitchen who have worked here for 20 years or more, you know, be way before I have, you know, and I want to make sure that, like, that there's respect to that, you know, and I think that we run our kitchen really well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take another break here. We're going to come back. We're going to do my speed round game and talk some industry news. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
I cheated.
Back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Matthew Riznick of Great Performances. It is time for my speed round game. Are you ready?
I'm excited.
Yeah, oh good. So I'm just going to name two things like chocolate or vanilla, and you pick your preference.
Got it.
All right, here we go.
Vanilla.
Vanilla. Yep. Fabulous.
Good.
Eat in or eat out?
Eat out.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Small.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Both.
Weddings, social, or corporate events?
Ooh. Social.
I finally stumped you.
Yeah, social.
How about downtown or uptown venues?
Downtown.
Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese. No question. Sorry, pastry chefs.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Wow, you were speedy. You definitely got that.
We were supposed to spend 10 minutes on this, huh? No?
No. Now we have, right, we have time to talk industry news. If
cool.
We got stuck, we wouldn't have
Sounds
had time.
Good.
Okay. So first up, I have to talk about this conference I just went to, and it was an article on Cleveland.com entitled Roots Conference at Chef's Garden in Milan draws lively conversation on future food issues, and it was by Joe Crea. I met Joe. So this is a two-day chef conference by Farmer Lee Jones of the Chef's Garden, and it was held at the Culinary Vegetable Institute, and it was just awesome. It was so intense, and it was tons of interesting topics being discussed, and then lunches and dinners prepared by really amazing chefs. I mean, we had this dinner in the greenhouse that was okay. This is great to mm-hmm. talk with you. 200 people, communal table, going all the way down the greenhouse, and the food, the menu was 5 courses cooked, each course by a different chef, and they got it down. I could not believe all the food came out hot on right. time. The service was fabulous. I was really impressed.
It was plated or it was family style?
It was a mix.
Okay.
It was a mix. And there were pairings to go with each course. I mean, that was one of the dinners. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you do stuff like that all the time.
We do. I mean, we do. And we've had a lot of experience, and we've had the great opportunity of working with great guest chefs. You know, I mean, we do dinners from, you know, 10 people to 10,000 and above. So we obviously know that, you know, there's certain challenges. I mean, every space has its challenge working in a greenhouse. I mean, we've cooked dinners for mm-hmm. 200 people out of what most people would call a broom closet, you know? So
yeah.
You got to give a lot of credit to chefs who are used to working in restaurants and who can actually pull off a dinner in something in another venue, you know? And I mean, we've done that too. We did a dinner for Le and Chateau, their annual dinner at Gotham Hall a few years ago, and we had, you know, 35 chefs in from around the world. Most were from Europe and Asia and didn't speak English. And, you know, having that experience working with those chefs on that level and putting out food for, you know, 400 people, it was like groups of three tables would get a group of chefs basically, and then one chef would do the first course, one would do the entree, you know, one would do, or there's three savory courses, or one would do the dessert. And then, you know, those three, it was times 10, you know what I mean? So you have a group of three chefs times 10 for three different tables. I mean, the amount of pieces of the puzzle that go into something like that is tremendous. But I give chefs, restaurant chefs, a ton of credit when they're able to do catering style and do it that well.
Yeah, well, I always love what happens is mm-hmm. the other chefs, they all go in the kitchen and they help plate.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just such, it's teamwork. And it's yeah. like you see They're just camaraderie, and they just make it happen.
I know. That's what I love about this industry. I've never been in one of those situations, especially with guest chefs, where one guest chef has thought himself above another, no matter their experience or, you know, their Michelin stars or anything like that. They're always going to just jump in and help out the guy right next to him. And I love that about this industry.
Yeah, me too. Well, I'm going to use that as a segue to go into the next piece. And one of the chefs of this conference was Matthew Acarino, who I worked with a really long time ago. But he got a Michelin star from SBQR. And the Michelin guide just came out yesterday, the San Francisco one.
Right.
So that was the next article I wanted to bring up. And the big news with that was that Corey Lee's Benno and Joshua Skeen's Sassone got three Michelin stars, and now they've doubled their three-star Michelins.
And coming close to New York.
Coming close, yes, because we have six, I believe.
Right. I think the food in San Francisco is absolutely tremendous. I was actually just there. I got back on Sunday. I was working, so unfortunately, I didn't have time for a tasting menu or multiple tasting menus. But, you know, what I love about San Francisco is that passion. I mean, where... And it's at a smaller level. There's so many smaller places that are doing just really tremendous food, even though it can be simple. I mean, you have one of the largest growing regions in the entire world in your backyard. You know, so the amount of produce and seafood and meats and everything is just tremendous and more available year-round. You know, and I think that that's an incredible tool for, you know, chefs to be working with out there, and that, you know, they pass that on to the diners. But I'm saying that I ate more simply, but I ate some of the best meals that I've eaten, and it was really, really important for me to understand that I don't need the three Michelin star restaurants, but the guys who are just doing it in kind of this undisclosed location, not undisclosed, but just, you know, out of the way location, they're doing it really well, and so many people are doing it really well. And I think that in a very short period of time, if not has happened already, people will start to think of San Francisco as an equal or better food town than New York.
Well, I definitely think people think very highly of San Francisco, and I think a lot of it has to do with that access it has to everything fresh and really local. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy, it's so accessible, so you can do simpler dishes, and it's just so fresh, and
you're just letting the ingredients speak for themselves, which I think is important. You know, in New York, once you get into December and January, if you're going to really stay true to that local ethos, you have a challenging road ahead, you know?
Right.
But I think that in California, I think you have a little bit more to play with. That's good.
Yeah, true. Well, today in the New York Times, Blenheim was reviewed. And this is a farm-to-table type restaurant because they have a farm up in the Catskills, Blen Hill Farm. And Pete Wells gave it 1 star. I talked about this place. I did a solo dining experience there. And it was, you know, his take on it was the food was good, but there was something a little off with the service. I think he had, there was a bit of a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, we're talking all this farm-to-table restaurants, and this isn't truly one.
It truly is, and it truly isn't. What I like that, you know, the chef is not pigeonholed into using just local products from the farm, that he's got sea urchin on the menu, that he's got some other things there that, you know, I mean, you stay true to your mission and you stay true to your roots, but a little bit fun here and there is totally okay. And I respect that, because too many people do try to just stick straight to local, and then like they lose a sense of creativity and a sense of play and wonder and, you know, what makes being a chef fun, you know? So I really, really respect that and respect what he's doing. And, you know, every day we go through the same thing that, in catering, I mean, we did 6,000 events last year, you know?
That's it.
I know. I should really, you know.
Yeah.
Sales team, come on, guys. And it doesn't, like, we understand that it doesn't even matter if I'm cooking great food. It doesn't matter if the service is great or the design is great or the sales is great or whatever. Like, everything has to come together. It has to every time, every moment, every day. And that's where, you know, I really respect, you know, this review, and like, it was a little bit harsh, but I think it was a really good point to understand that in this industry, and that's why I love the experience that I've had working every area of it, because then you see that it needs to be cohesive. It needs to be cohesive every second of every day, every time, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're going to take this review, and they're going to run with it, and they're going to be amazing. Like, I mean, they already have the bones to be, to start of something great, and they're gonna crush it, I'm sure. But it just reminds us every day how important every department working together is and hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah, very true. Okay, great. We're going to take one more break here. Okay. We're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience.
Okay.
This is all in the industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Now, this week I checked out Uma Tamakeria. Here's the rundown. The location, the corner of 7th Avenue and 14th Street in New York City. The concept, fast casual sushi restaurant serving high-quality tamaki, or hand rolls, inspired by tamakerias in Brazil. The chef, Chris Jackal of Alonda, formerly of 11 Madison Park and iFiori. Why did I go? Because the concept sounded awesome, and I was craving sushi. My experience? I went for an early dinner on a Friday night. It wasn't very busy then, and I found, honestly, the process was a bit confusing, as I didn't know who to order what from. I figured it out. It was two people in this sort of assembly line that ended up preparing my order. What did I get? The tamaki set. Two hand rolls and a side, plus water. I chose the sumi tuna roll with green apple and wasabi ginger and white rice, and asara salmon with seaweed salad, creamy miso, and brown rice, and a side of kale with balsamic miso. My take? Very fresh and delicious, although I would have liked a little more salmon and tuna per roll and less rice. I also wish they offered avocado as a vegetable choice. They actually have it pictured in a photo above the counter, but it's not offered. And I loved the kale salad. It had lots of sweet cranberries in it, which was a nice combo. The space, counter service with about a dozen seats at tables and some stools. Perfect for a solo bite or meeting a friend. Interesting tidbit, Uma Tamakeria is inspired by tamakerias in Brazil, combining their joy for life with the hospitality and attention to detail of Japan. Personal fun fact, I did my solo dining experience at Alunda, which is Chris Jackal's other restaurant, on episode 4. Remember, I love my single scoop soy gelato. The cost, $18 total. Would I go back? Most likely, especially if they start offering avocado. The website is umatamakeria.com. Okay, so Matthew, mm-hmm. It is now time for the final question. Now, next week, I'm having on Helen Rosner. She is a contributor to Saveur Magazine's The New Classics Cookbook, more than 1,000 of the world's best recipes for today's home kitchen. I want to see if you can ask her a question.
I think I may have two, but the first one...
That is okay.
...is the cookbook is titled The New Classics Cookbook. So I want to understand how they define a new classic. So is it classical dishes from, you know, French or Italian cookery that are translated into a home cook, or is this some modern interpretation of it? And then the other one, for someone who, we do a lot of PR, we do a lot of newsletters and write recipes and things like that, you know, what's the most intimidating part of a recipe for a home cook in her experience?
Great questions. Very different great questions. I like it.
Cool.
Thank you.
That's it. My pleasure.
All right.
It's been fun.
It has been fun. Thank you for coming on the show. Give a shout out to Jimmy Carbone, who has a Heritage Radio Network show, and he introduced us.
Oh, Jimmy. One of my old friends. I love Jimmy Carbone. What's up, brother?
Yeah, he's awesome. Okay, so I've been talking to Matthew Riznik. He's the executive chef of Great Performances. Their website is greatperformances.com, and their Twitter is GPFood. My Twitter Instagram is at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. And my Facebook is All Industry as well. If people want to check it out, I post a lot of news and photos on there. Now, as always, if you miss a live broadcast, you can always find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We're on Stitcher and we're on iTunes. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, and thanks to all you out there listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope to have you tune in again next week when I'm back at 4 o'clock with another live show. Thanks. I'm Sherry Bayer, signing off with All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.